Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz, episode 56 for February 15th, 2009. Étoilé. This show is brought to you by listeners like you and your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks so much. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers free, libre, open source software each and every week with Randall Schwartz, Perl programmer extraordinaire, Squeak and Seaside expert. He serves on the board of many open source projects, and he's available at stonehenge.com. Hello, Mr. Schwartz.
Every time you introduce me, there's just so many more things to talk about. That's really weird.
I'm just adding to your CV. That's all.
Hey, Leo. Good to talk to you
Good to talk to you again. We have a really interesting show planned for you today. It's with David in David. What is his name? David Chisnell.
Yep.
In Britain. He's in the UK. Mm-hmm. And Quentin Mate. Mm-hmm. He's in France.
Yes.
To talk about something called étoile or étoilé. You say étoilé, I say étoile. You say heaven, I say...
But before we get to that, why don't we talk a little bit about last week's show?
Okay. So, first of all, I want to ask you a question. Because we had a great show. And I did not fully appreciate what a rock star we had on the show yesterday.
Oh, it was amazing. I tell you, the show on jQuery with John Resig. I was watching the tweets on this, the Twitter messages on this afterwards, and it has to, I think it definitely sets a new record for the number of tweets we had about a single show, because obviously Resig is a rock star. He is well known in the community.
It's like having the Bono of JavaScript on the show.
It was a lot of fun, and I've made a lot of new friends out of that. And I've
now, let me ask you, was I a complete doofus on the show?
You didn't do bad.
There were those who thought that I was like a complete clueless noob. I guess did I ask some really dumb questions?
No, I think you asked very appropriate questions. I think you brought in
you
some
can tell
of the
truth, Randall. Was I a complete doofus? Yeah, it was a little bit, huh? All right.
But that's why we like you, Leo.
I have to learn to shut up. I bought John's book. I'm going to read his book. I don't pretend to be a JavaScript programmer. And I think mostly people were mad at me because I didn't treat him with the awe and respect that he deserved.
Well, I think we both suffer from that slightly. So, because I didn't know, again, as well, just what a rock star he was. And again, I apologize for any of his fans that are listening we just sort of went, well, he's just a guy. He just invented this little thing.
He is just a guy. Come on. I mean, just, look, although I have to say, you know, and I'm familiar with jQuery. We use jQuery on a couple of my sites. And so I was aware of it. And then after we did the interview, I looked around and I see jQuery everywhere, not just on sites, but people talking about it, people using it, people writing stuff for it. Mm-hmm. It's its own ecosystem. So, John, I apologize for not bowing and scraping and giving you but he was very nice. He didn't act like he wanted us to bow and scrape.
And he inspired me to read more about it because, as I said,
I bought his book.
I was up till midnight after last week's taping. Just reading about jQuery. I definitely want to migrate some of my clients' code to this. I said, well, you know, in fact, it was funny. I was in the IRC channel for like the next couple of days, and about every 20 minutes, I would come on the IRC channel and go, oh, you can do this to do that. And they were like, it's Randall. He's in a candy store. This is great. So I really, you know, to the people who are developing jQuery, including John and all of his cohorts, I applaud you because it's definitely going to have an impact on the way that I'm able to make friendly applications that work in the browser.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I apologize if I said anything dumb, although I think some of that is also, you get people who are really expert in a certain area and they look down their nose at anybody who's, you know, clueless. And I never pretended not to be clueless.
And he never looked down his nose.
He was very nice to me. He didn't act like I said anything stupid. But but somebody said, oh, all right, he really put up with Leo's stupid questions. I was like, okay, wow, I didn't realize that was going on. I guess I was so clueless, I didn't even know I was clueless.
I think you did fine, Leo.
I plan to be equally clueless on this next interview. Étoile is a star in French. I know that much.
Starry or something, according to the website. So it's something about stars.
Etoileos.com. Let's get Quentin and David on the line. And actually, I guess the first thing we should ask them is it étoile? Étoile? What? Who wants to take that one, David or Quentin?
David.
I was going to let you take that one.
It's an operating, I'm guessing it's an operating system, since the website is Etoile OS, right?
That's a domain Jesse registered a while ago when we were still in the early on planning stages. It's a desktop environment aiming not just at desktop machines, obviously now, less obviously when we started it. We're building on top of existing operating systems, so you can install on Linux, on FreeBSD. There's someone who occasionally installs on Solaris and tells us all why it doesn't work.
Is it a window manager, like GNOME, KDE, that kind of thing?
There's currently a window manager called Azalea in our tree, which is about to be deprecated as soon as I finish writing the replacement.
We're getting rid of it.
Yeah, it's a fork of OpenBox, which is a Objective-C window manager, which has a sort of vaguely OpenStep look. But the code is really crafty, and no one really understands it or likes it. I've started work recently on a replacement, which will adopt this project user interface model that we're aiming for in the medium term, which combines the idea of something a lot like a folder with something a lot like a virtual desktop. So you'll have persistent workspaces which can be layered on top of each other in a sort of transparent deck of cards model.
So we had the GNUSTEP people on a few months ago to talk about the lower layers of interfacing, the ability to have objects that are using standard APIs and stuff like that, and interface with the operating system. So from what I understand, Etoile sits on top of GNUSTEP and provides user interfaces for it.
Yeah, so I guess one of you was using a Mac, you said.
Yes.
So GNUSTEP provides something which is roughly equivalent to the Cocoa APIs. Mm-hmm. So if you take an OS X application that doesn't use too many of the really new things like core animation, that kind of thing, then you can pretty much just recompile it for GNUSTEP and it'll work on other platforms. So we get a load of really neat stuff from GNUSTEP. We get this distributed objects mechanism, so you can have a proxy object in one process or even on one computer and another that'll transparently interact with a real object in another process. So it's really easy for us to build very loosely coupled systems on top of this.
So what's being added then on top of GNUSTEP then? So is it things are we looking at the level of like terminal app or is that too high a level? Where are we on the scale then?
So what we've mainly been working on so far is the core frameworks. And I guess this is where I get Quentin to speak a little bit about core objects and Etoile UI, since that's mainly what he's been working on.
Yes, initially we started to write application based on GNUSTEP to create a new desktop environment. And after 2 years of development, we realized it was going to be difficult to achieve the goals we have set for Etoile, because our plan is to create a desktop environment based on ideas such as composite documents, data sharing between applications, allowing any application to access the content of other documents or other databases, like accessing the content of a photo database, a music database, a contact database, without having to write any code. And because of that, we decide to rethink our approach and create new core frameworks David was just mentioning. And the first of them is CoreObject. It's more or less an object-oriented database. David started to work on the lower layer, and maybe you can explain a bit how this lower layer works.
Yeah, if we could have some way to distinguish, I mean, I think some of our audience is probably familiar with an SQL type database, as in something like MySQL or Postgres or something. So how would CoreObject be different from that? And also, how would it be different from, say, if you're familiar with Gemstone, how would it be different from that?
Well, CoreObject is different from an SQL database because it just serializes your object without an object relational mapping framework, which mm-hmm. is going to translate your object data into tables into your database. So there is a special format for object, which are simply serialized between the memory and the disk. The difference between CoreObject and other object-oriented database is the fact it's built on serializing message sent to object and a snapshot of the object rather than only snapshot for storing the content in the database. Because we serialize messages which are received by the object, we get the history for each object recorded in the database. So CoreObject is like a temporal database, if you want.
So you automatically get the ability to do undo or that sort of history and probably even get transactions in there for free, right?
Yes, exactly.
That's really cool because I know that I'm familiar a little bit with how Postgres is designed inside, where when you're actually creating a new row in a Postgres database, it leaves the old row sitting around and just creates a new one and says this is where the new one is. But then when the transaction needs to roll back, if it fails, the old one is already still there. So you could do the same thing with these objects then, right?
Yeah, so that's exactly what we're trying to do. The idea is that no document in Etoile will be destructively edited. So at this very core of the CoreObject system that Quentin said that I worked on earlier is the Etoile serialized framework. And that can take most arbitrary Objective-C objects and serialize them without any extra code. There's a bit extra you need to do if you're dealing with raw C pointers, but there are hooks in for supporting them yourself.
Now, what advantage does serializing or what advantage does having an object database give you as a programmer? What are you actually doing with this?
So one of the nice things about Objective-C is that when you send a message to an object, when you call a method, that message can also be encapsulated in an object by the runtime system. And so we can log those messages automatically. So all we're doing when you're running a program which uses this CoreObject system, you get a proxy object which looks like the real object. You call methods on it just as you would if it were the real object, but it records every single message you send to it to the disk, and periodically, I think currently every 100 messages, it will take a snapshot of this object graph and sort of store that on disk. And that means that your undo history is permanently committed to your disk. And if your program crashes or someone pulls the power lead out, the most data that you'll lose is the amount between the last time the disk cache was flushed and when the power lead was pulled.
Wow. Not to get too much more geeky in this, I want to get back to some higher level questions, but I'm fascinated by this. Would it also support replication? Could I go off the box with those same updates and have a failover to a second system then?
Yeah, I've started working on that at the hackathon last year and then stopped because I got horrendously distracted with writing completely unrelated things. But one of the things we really want to support is having an authoritative core object server, which will be, say, in your house in a network attached storage box with massive amounts of redundancy. And then a local cache that'll be on your handheld machine, and it'll pull down the bits you need and push them up. And that's fairly easy to support with this model, because every single change is recorded in a separate file inside a bundle. And so you can easily modify a file in one place and push the changes back. And you can even use something like rsync to easily push the changes back because you're just duplicating the new files.
This is clearly not... I mean, I like the combination of things you put together here, but really you're in the same, solving a lot of the same problems that a lot of other similar operating systems are solving, right?
Yeah, yes, I mean, but, sorry.
Well, CoreObject is a bit different because it's both an object-oriented database and something like a file system layer, which allows you to organize your object. And so we would have the CoreObject layer on top of the operating system and a bridge to import foreign document into the CoreObject database and export a native CoreObject to the outside world.
Hmm. Okay. So getting a little higher level again, just because, you know, now that we've put 30% of our audience to sleep, let's back up a bit. Who are you writing this for? I mean, who would Etoile appeal to? Where's the audience for this to start with?
David?
Well, I guess, as with any open source project, the main target market is obviously us. I mean, we're writing this because none of us are really satisfied with any of the existing systems. Mm-hmm. Most of us use Macs and curse them for getting so close to being a really nice system to use and not going quite that last bit of the distance. And actually, a lot of the ideas we're adopting are coming from other Apple systems that have now been discontinued with Steve Jobs' return as the Apple messiah. Things like the Newton Soup concept. It was the persistent store for all documents on the Newton. And we get a lot of ideas for CoreObject from that. Mm. We're taking a few user interface ideas from the Newton too. Mm. Open doc pluggable cross-application system that got killed by Adobe because they didn't want people to be able to produce competitors to Photoshop too easily was on earlier versions of OS X, of Mac OS, sorry, before OS X, the classic version. And we get a lot of ideas from there.
Now, that would be allowing objects of different types, like my document could have a spreadsheet embedded in it, or my spreadsheet could have a photo embedded in it, but have independent identity and history in my file system or whatever is storing it permanently then, right?
Yeah, so the companion to this CoreObject framework is the Etoile UI framework, which does for user interfaces what CoreObject does for models. So the idea is that you'll have just a general way of interacting with composite documents, and then individual elements in this will be composed together using a really generic framework.
Hmm. And what would that be like in practical terms? Once this is all done, you know, five months, 5 years from now, whenever the time frame is, what will I be able to sit down and do? What will my interaction be like?
So the first thing you'll... Sorry, did Quentin want to say something?
No.
Notice I'm staying out of it too. Go ahead, David. It's all yours.
Yeah. So the first thing you'll do is you'll create a project, typically, which will be some grouping of related objects.
Mm-hmm.
And this might be, say, I'm working on a book at the moment, and I might have a project for the book, and then a project for the code samples for the book, and a project for the text of the book as sub-projects within that. So you get this hierarchy that's a lot like a directory structure, and it supports links as well. But that gives you the sort of top-level visual interface. And then within that, you'll create objects. And we're trying to get away from the application model as a metaphor for interacting with the computer. If you want to create a table, you create a table, and exactly what it is that's providing that table, whether it's in the same process as whatever view you've embedded it in, or if it's free-floating and owned by a completely new process which doesn't share anything with any of your other running applications, is not something the user should be caring about. So we're trying to move away from that.
This is something very modern that I know Microsoft even considered kind of doing this, making the file system be an object database and treating data as separate from the application. And yet nobody has, neither Apple nor Microsoft has really been able to do this.
Well, Microsoft and Apple both have the problem that it really doesn't fit with their business model.
They have legacy.
Well, the reason that OpenDoc, which supported this kind of thing, was killed on Apple's old platform is that this kind of component-driven design really doesn't work well with a proprietary off-the-shelf model for developing software.
Mm-mm. Why is that?
Because no one wants to buy a text editing widget. it's a small amount of code. It'll be, maybe 50 cents or a dollar.
Right.
And you'll need to assemble a load of these to construct your application.
Why is this a better way to do it from the point of view of the user? I mean, I can see why it's not from a business point of view, not a great idea. Why is it, presumably it's better for the user. Why is it better for the user?
It's better for the user because it gets rid of a lot of modal interactions. Applications are a pathological case of a modal user interface. Every application has a different user interface.
Right.
Unless they're using some common, say, a text field, some common widget, for some subset of their interaction, they all behave slightly differently. And
not only that, but when you're in an application, you're in that application. Even with windowing, it's very modal. You're using Word. You're not using Excel.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at how people who don't really like computers use their machines, they tend to try and do everything inside Word. So they'll scan an image into Word, they'll send an email, which will be a Word document from within Word. And if that's how people want to use a computer, that's the kind of environment we want to make. So you won't do it from inside Word, you'll do it from inside a project environment, which is actually designed for that kind of thing.
It does sound far superior. And yet, I think we've all been kind of trained to this modal application-based way of doing things. Do people sometimes take, as I just did, a while to grok what you're up to?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this idea isn't new. If you read something like Jeff Raskin's The Humane Interface.
Yeah, Raskin, this is what he was all about.
Very close to what he was describing.
Yeah.
But everyone who's tried it in practice so far has been doing it from this proprietary model and has done most of the implementation and then realized there's no business model for this.
Right. But open source doesn't need a business model. That's the beauty of open source.
Yeah, this
it works really well with open source because open source is at its best when individual developers can make a contribution.
Right.
And when you've got something that decomposes into things that are small enough for one or two developers to understand, then that's the perfect environment for free software.
Works very well with object-oriented development, too, because those are all objects. And your data is an object.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, wouldn't it be the case, then, that if I was sitting down to an initial distribution that knew how to deal with, say, images, with 10 different things you could do to images, and I wanted to say, make my image a little bit smarter, and I added an 11th thing somehow, because all open source, I can tweak whatever level I want to on it. Now it's not just in that one application that images now have these 11 features. It's every place an image appears in my system, I've got this extra feature, right?
Yeah. Yes. And one of the things that we got from GNUstep, which is very nice, is this notion of a user app kit bundle. So whenever a GNUstep application starts, it tries to load any of the bundles that are specified in this special field in the user default system. Mm-hmm. And because this is Objective-C, which inherits from Smalltalk, those bundles can contain things called categories as well as classes. And a category is kind of a way of extending a class. It lets you add new methods to existing classes.
Mm.
And what we can do is inject this code into the system whenever an application starts. And so it appears in every single running application. And we do this with one of the bundles we provide is the Etoile Behavior bundle. And that does a few things for nicer system integration. Something I added to it recently was I added support for this just-in-time Smalltalk compiler that I wrote, so that as well as adding these static global bundles, it will load Smalltalk source files, which can themselves represent classes and categories. It'll compile them, and it'll load them into your launching application. And this means now that any user can modify any application that they have installed, any GNUstep-based application that they have installed in a high-level language without needing the source code.
Wow. Ooh. Ooh.
This seems the kind of thing that appeals to programmers more than end users. So,
I mean, you're right, but I don't think there should be such a strong differentiation between people who program and people who don't program. Pretty much anything you do with a computer involves some level of programming. I mean, even producing a Word document, you're applying styles, you're creating formatting rules. It's just a question of whether you're using a general purpose language or a domain specific language. And so one of the things I've been working on with LanguageKit is trying to make it easier for people to add domain-specific languages. Hmm. So I mentioned this Smalltalk compiler. The Smalltalk-specific parts of that are less than 1,000 lines of code. So if you want to add some new language that interacts with the Objective-C object model, then you can do this really easily if you need to add a domain-specific language for some special purpose cases. Then we can support that.
Like, for example, the Ruby on Rails people created a sort of variant of Ruby, in a sense, where the syntax was appropriate to doing web development. This would be something that you could do with a domain-specific language using the extensions you've got in the operating system then.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we could write, for example, something that would parse HTML and extract some markup from it and have something a lot like the old web object scripting language, just embedded straight in the HTML, or using the same backend compiler that we're using for Smalltalk.
And once you did that, once you taught HTML to do that, then every HTML doc in your system would know how to do that then.
Yeah.
Wow. That would be cool.
It's the ultimate extensible system.
Well, this reminds me of this is what Smalltalk was promising to be.
Right.
And you do have Smalltalk in here, but you're building it on top of Objective-C and on top of GNUstep. So how would it be different? How would you contrast it then with, say, the original Smalltalk 80 vision? Because we've had Dan Ingles on talking about Smalltalk. How would you contrast this with that?
Well, Smalltalk is a really great system, and it's another place that we're stealing a lot of ideas from. But the thing that Smalltalk, you know, if Smalltalk were a small child, then it would be coming home in the late 80s and its parents would look at its report card and say, "Reed does not play well with others." And I think that's really the thing that killed Smalltalk for mainstream adoption. Mm-hmm. That in 1980, they produced a system that was way better than anything else on the market. And all you had to do if you wanted to use it was not use anything else. And unfortunately, everyone had some legacy code.
Right.
And then 10 years later, everyone had loads of legacy code.
Right.
And so Objective-C in that same time frame was kind of a nice compromise because it gives you most of what Smalltalk gives you that's nice. And it's a bit faster. And it's a pure superset of C, which means that all of these nice C libraries that you've been accumulating, you can just call directly. And with Objective-C++, you can call C++ libraries. And with any language that has a bridge to C, you can call those libraries as well. So using Objective-C gives you this nice way of reusing lots of existing code. The Smalltalk compiler is then built on top of that. So we still get all the nice high-level stuff that Smalltalk gives you. We get first-class closures. We get to not have to think so much about memory management. We get to have this pure object-oriented system, so everything is an object. But also, we get something that targets the same ABI as the Objective-C compiler. So when you compile a Smalltalk class in with our compiler, it can produce an object file, or it can just-in-time compile it, but it can produce some object code which you can link directly with your Objective-C program, and your Objective-C program can't tell the difference between an object that comes from a class that was written in Smalltalk and one that was written in Objective-C. And you can mix the two together if you want. You can have a class that's written in Smalltalk that inherits from a class that's written in Objective-C. You can have categories written in Smalltalk that add methods to classes written in Objective-C.
Now, please tell me that at some point here, this will work on OS X as well. Please.
People keep asking me that.
I'm not the first.
There are two problems. One is the linker on OS X comes from the Dark Ages and doesn't support thread local storage. And there are workarounds for that that I haven't got around to implementing yet. The other thing is the Objective-C runtime library on OS X doesn't use typed selectors, which means... a selector is basically an abstract form of a method name. It's the method name mapped to some unique value, which is typically a pointer to a unique version of the string.
Mm-hmm.
With the GNU runtime and with the Etoile runtime, selectors also have type information associated with them. And this is really useful for the compiler because the compiler can look up the selector, say, this method takes an integer along and an object pointer as arguments. Jolly good, I'll unbox my Smalltalk objects, turn them into that format, and issue a function call. With the Apple runtime, you don't have that information. You can kind of work around it by enumerating every single method in every single loaded class and building this table yourself, but it's way more effort than I can be bothered with.
Hmm.
So it is possible to port it to OS X. The only other thing then you'd need to do is rewrite the runtime abstraction layer in the compiler. And that's based on code that I wrote originally for Clang, which is the new Objective-C, C, C++ front-end for LLVM. So you can look at the Mac implementation in Clang for some inspiration on how to do that. As always, patches are welcome, but it's not something that's on my to-do list.
Oh, that's just sad. Oh, well.
But did you done a user, end-user version at all yet? I mean, it's still really in development.
Yeah, we're aiming for our 0.5 release, which hopefully will be sometime this year, to be the first user-focused release.
Yeah. So are people using it, though, in production environments to get real work done, or is it not quite there yet?
People are using bits of it. I don't think anyone's using an exclusively Etoile environment, right, because it's just not sufficiently finished. But I think we've now got the really core frameworks that we need to build the rest of the stuff.
And that's your hope? That's your plan to get
we can start building the nice stuff.
Cool. So you do want to get to that point where it's a user environment.
Yeah. I mean, we'd really like to be able to just use a Twilight and nothing else.
Right.
And that's obviously not going to happen for a really long time. But one of the advantages that we have over Smalltalk, for example, is that we're running in an X11 environment. If there's no good web browser for Smalltalk, there's no good web browser for a Twilight, but you can run Firefox and a Twilight.
Right. What does that look like? Does it look like you'll have a regular window manager, Firefox running, and then a Twilight window, a workspace open?
Well, when I finish with the new window manager, then you'll have all the Twilight windows will be handled by this project manager directly.
Right.
Non-Twilight windows will probably add some extra border around to indicate that they're foreign and you shouldn't expect them to behave exactly like native ones.
Because this is something I've wanted for ever since OpenDoc and similar projects. It's ever since, you know, Jeff Raskin never wanted a modal operating system at all. He never liked the idea of having Windows in this modality. And it just makes a lot of sense. And I've played with Raskin's, kind of prototype systems to do that. And you have to unlearn some stuff too. We're used to modal environments.
Yeah, that's true. And, it's a real shame. And
cause there is a, that's what I like about this. There's a possible better way to do it. But we've all learned this bad way of doing it. We're all used to it. But there is possible to do better things. And Etoile is, I guess in a way it's evangelizing for that way of doing things.
Yeah. Even if we don't end up producing something that everyone's going to use, I mean, all the code's BSD licensed, we want people to steal our ideas.
Right.
We're producing this because we think this is how, an environment ought to work. And if someone else builds an environment that works this way, then that's great. And we don't have to.
Right.
We can go and work on other stuff.
Quentin, we haven't heard much from you because of technical issues. Is there anything you want to add? David's done a great job explaining it all, but I'd like to hear from you.
Yes, he explained many things. But maybe I can talk a bit about Etoile UI.
Yes, please.
Etoile UI is a companion framework for CoreObject. It's more or less a UI toolkit if you want. But what is cool with it is the fact you can change the entire UI of a running application with the mouse and inspectors. For example, if you use a Mail client and you want to use a column view instead of a tree view to browse your mail, you can do that very easily with this framework. And it even works at higher level. For example, you can decide to inspect the content of your screen with a tree view. And with this tree view, you are going to see what windows are attached to your screen, what is the content of your windows, and what is in each element visible in your windows. With this framework, you have the possibility to change the UI at runtime very easily. And this is interesting because a big limitation with the current graphics editor, for example, is the fact you cannot adjust the UI of the application for your workflow. For example, in an application like Photoshop or GIMP, you may want a special arrangement of your palette, your tools, something very tailored for your workflow. And with this framework, it became possible to do this sort of things without writing any special code. So you can change the UI of each application if you want.
And how does that happen? How does that look? You drag things around, or?
Well, basically, the core idea of Etoile UI is borrowed from Self and Smalltalk, the Morphic UI toolkit. Everything on screen is represented as a single uniform tree. So you don't really have windows, button, or unrelated element. You only have one type of node in the tree structure. And on this tree structure, you have aspects which are dynamically bound at runtime. So for example, when you can open a special Etoile UI inspector, which lets you broad the content of the application UI, and you can click on the element which represent a button in one of the application windows and drag it in another location in this special browser, and then the button will move.
So this is similar to the Xcode Builder UI thing, except you can do it on an already existing object that's out there.
Well, you can do it at runtime, and with the Interface Builder, you can only do it when your application is currently in development by editing the interface description file. But with Etoile UI, it's a bit it's more powerful because you can change how your content is present on screen. For example, if you use a tree view, you can replace it by a column view or by an icon view without writing any code.
That's going to be really nice for people that like to skin things exactly the way they want them and maybe make a theme across everything. I know that's really big for some people, not for me, but I know that that's a really huge thing for some people.
That's interesting for this kind of use, but it's also interesting because it gives a generic model to build a structured graphics editor. Mm-hmm. For example, you can decide to switch your window layer layout or presentation to page layout presentation. Then the windows which are displayed by the window manager are going to disappear, and you are going to have each window content in rectangles with handles, and you will be able to resize each element, to rotate them, to apply styles exactly as you would do it in a vector graphics editor.
Okay.
So you have a built-in, if you want, you have Inkscape in every application, and you can extend it as you want.
Yeah, that's very cool. Very cool.
And it's combined with something like Interface Builder available at runtime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. Okay, so I do want to play with this. You guys got to figure out a way to go to OS 10.
Well, no, we use Linux. It runs on BSD. Randall, what are you worried about?
I don't use BSD on my laptop, so I'd have to run all GNU step from the ground up on my laptop. Probably.
How demanding is it in terms of hardware? Is this more demanding than the traditional application focused model, Quentin? Or does it run? Would it run on anything that a standard Linux would run on?
Oh yes, it runs on pretty standard PC. I use it on, for example, on a G4 Mac or a Core Duo PC, and it runs really well on this kind of hardware. Mm. Because we have no special effect like Mac OS X. Very complex transparency, right, or 3D animation, this kind of stuff, which are really CPU consuming.
So what's your development environment like? What are you coding in every day? Is it the GNU Step tools for that, or do you have your own stuff already built for all the Smalltalk, or what?
Currently, it's more a combination of VI, KET, and the interface builder clone for GNUstep, which is called GORM. Mm-hmm. But the plan in the long term is to have our own code editor based on a structured edition and our own IDE for dynamic languages, a special IDE for editing and managing Smalltalk code or JavaScript code. And David has started to work on that a bit with other people, which are part of Etoile.
And we want to. Sorry. Nicola's done most of the work on the IDE so far. When I designed the compiler, I wanted to make it possible to translate back from the abstract syntax tree into the source code, so it still retains things like comments. And Nicola's been working on some code that'll do that, and will also use the parser for syntax highlighting. So he's got a prototype, which is called Code Monkey, and it's still very early.
I know that song.
Now I've got it in my head. I won't be able to stop thinking about it again.
It has the same sort of class browser that you get in a Smalltalk 80 environment like Squeak, so you can browse classes that have been loaded into the system already. You can browse the methods on those, and if the source is available, you can then see the syntax highlighted source for them. You can edit it, and it'll then recompile that method.
Now, are you building your own change control eventually? Are you using SVN right now, right?
Yeah. The aim is, in the long run, that we'll use a core object-based storage for all source code rather than dumping it into flat files. And so, in that case, we get revision control absolutely for free.
That would be really exciting, and especially when you finally trust your source code to your source code.
Yes.
When you're eating your own dog food, that'll be interesting. Yes.
That's cool. I think that's great. I mean, you should obviously, the idea of a design like this is it's easy to add functionality by adding components, and it just makes sense. You slowly expand it to do everything you need it to do.
And what's your interest? Sorry.
Yes. The point is, if you have a component, you can extend, and you are going to build application more easily. For example, in current desktop environment, every graphics editor is re-implementing its own graphics engine. And with Etoile UI, you can have a small graphics engine you can reuse instead of writing your own. And CoreObject does the same thing for Object Manager style application like Photo Manager, Music Manager, this kind of application. You don't have to recreate your own database system. It's a lot more easier to code.
So what more resources do you need for this? What help do you need that you're not getting now? And what kind of people are you looking for to help participate in this project?
Well, we are looking for any kind of developers or graphic designer too, or people which are just interested. But I think we would like more people to work on the core framework, like CoreObject, LanguageKit, which is the basis for Smalltalk, and Etoile UI. Because currently we are a bit short in manpower to finish this framework and start working intensively on the first user-oriented release.
And what skills would someone need? They need Objective-C. They'd probably need familiarity with GNUstep. What else?
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be familiarity with GNUstep in particular. Most of the APIs are the same across GNUstep and Cocoa, so anyone who's looking to switch from the Mac is very welcome.
Mm.
And anyone with any Smalltalk experience will probably complain at the lack of Smalltalk 80 object in my implementation. But if you've used Smalltalk and used Cocoa, then you'll find Etoile very familiar.
Is the Smalltalk fairly complete? Does it have things like curly brace arrays and things like that, the extension?
Yeah, you can have literal arrays declared. We've actually had another guy working on the parser quite a lot recently. The first version I wrote was horrendous and compiled something vaguely like Smalltalk. The current version is now fairly complete, and people who know Smalltalk can read the code and say, yes, that's actual Smalltalk. The big difference, of course, is Smalltalk is a really small language. It defines most of the really important bits of functionality are in the library. So, for example, we don't have an array class. We have the OpenStep NS array, NS mutable array. So when you do the curly brace thing, you get an instance of NS array. When you create a literal string, you get an NS constant string object, not a small talk string. So the language is the same. The libraries are different.
That sounds similar to what FScript did. Are you familiar with FScript?
Yeah. FScript, I think, now is switching to a similar approach. It was bolting an interpreter on top, whereas I'm just compiling straight down to the same object model.
Is there any interest in the long run of having being able to just read, say, a squeak file in and have it magically do the right thing for all the class definitions?
Yeah, I think that would be really nice. You can probably create something that'll read the output from the squeak file dump thing fairly easily. Performing that mapping from the Smalltalk 80 objects to the OpenStep objects is a bit harder. But again, it should be fairly simple. There are lots of really small but annoying differences, like dictionaries and arrays in Smalltalk have a put at method, whereas in OpenStep you have a set object at index or set object for key. So some of those mappings aren't exactly the same, and that would be kind of hard to get right. But if you've got code that doesn't use the standard Smalltalk 80 objects directly, but uses them via other objects, then maybe you can port it between the two.
That'd be an interesting project for someone who had a lot more spare time than I did. That'd be fun to play with, though. Obviously, Smalltalk interests me, so that's why I'm asking. Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, so we've got now one application is in Eric's branch as a photo manager, which is written purely in Smalltalk now. So I finally got round to adding support to the compiler driver to load application bundles. So you can now run this just by double-clicking on the bundle. There's no compiling needed, which is quite nice. The other one is the Melody Music Manager application, which is also by Eric. He's probably used the Smalltalk compiler a lot more than anyone else. He's been really great for finding bugs. And that is kind of becoming a showcase application for Etoile. It uses core object to manage your music library. All the high-level code is written in Smalltalk. It's compiled using LanguageKit. It uses the Etoile thread library for putting the decoder in the other thread. So Etoile thread is just a really simple, lightweight library which lets you take an object and put it in another thread. And if you send it a message, you call a method on it, it returns immediately, and it returns with a future. So your calling thread doesn't block until you send a message to the object that was returned. And if you never do, then it never blocks.
Nice.
And that's really great for the music player, which just polls the decoder periodically to update the user interface. And the decoder is running in a separate thread. And all of that synchronization is implicit. The only way you're aware that this code uses threads at all is that there's an in new thread message sent to the decoder object.
Wow. This is one of those things that I'm seeing it. I want to go play with it now. Looks like it's definitely coming along. Although
What do you see as the timeline for being more, I don't want to say end user friendly, but I guess it's probably the closest phrase I have for that. I mean, when you're sort of more released, you know, when that's likely to be.
We're hoping, we've got a hackathon planned here in Swansea for May. Mm-hmm. And the one last year was really productive. We got a lot of the core object stuff properly addressed. Hopefully this year we can have one that's a bit more user focused and try and build something that's at least ready for a preview of the 0.5 release. So I'm hoping over the summer to have something that at least end users can download and use for some of their work. Obviously not all of it, but at least something that'll let you play with it and say, ah, this will grow into something eventually.
Is there any chance that the object database code could be separately ported back to OS X? Or is that just too fundamentally wired into the stuff below it?
That might be possible, but the very low-level stuff all uses runtime introspection functions to get the structure of the object at runtime, to get the types of all of its instance variables, to serialize them if they're primitive C values automatically, then to recursively serialize any object pointers and call a method to serialize any C pointers. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that runtime introspection stuff, all of that runtime introspection stuff is runtime specific. That wouldn't be too difficult to port. We've also added a load of categories on the basic GNU step objects, which are basically fudges to work around serializing them. So things like NSURL just stores a couple of pointers to complex C structures that we don't want to serialize manually. We just serialize the whole thing as a string. Mm-hmm. Porting them to OS X would be a bit more effort. So again, it would be possible and patches are welcome. And if anyone wants to do that, then I'd be happy to walk them through the code.
Because I'm thinking that this would be an interesting, like open source equivalent for Gemstone, if you have the kind of performance and transactions in that that you've already said you have in there already.
I think the target is a bit different than Gemstone. We are not aiming for performance immediately. What we want is just to build an object-oriented database which can be used well for desktop environment, storing document, photos, everything you store on a file system, but with a more flexible organization and the storage of the history of every object. But in the future, eventually, it would be possible to turn us core object in something closer to Gemstone, for example.
Hmm. Now, this is BSD licensed?
It's MIT license, okay. The higher level layer, and the lowest is BSD, if I remember correctly.
Okay, so parts of this could be adopted and adapted with relative freedom then?
Yes.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I know it's getting late for you guys. We're calling you in the middle of the afternoon, our time, to you guys' time. What is it, midnight or 1 o'clock now in France?
Yes, it's a bit after midnight now.
So thank you for staying up this late, and I apologize for the timing confusion from earlier, but this has been really fascinating. I've really enjoyed having you guys on today's show, and I think there's probably a lot of people that will now have exposure to this project and want to participate on some level, maybe wanting the results of it or at least wanting to help out.
Well, more than that, even, I think what people really might want to start thinking about is other ways the operating systems can work. I mean, I think that's what's really exciting about this is getting away from that modal application focused point of view. And I'm glad that the document focused point of view is still alive, frankly. It's seems to me the right way to do things. I'm glad you're doing it, guys. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks.
All right. Good night, Quentin.
Nice.
Take care.
Good night.
Bye-bye. David, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't realize exactly, Randall, when we were talking about Etoile, what it was. I mean, I thought at first it was like a work workspace like the Squeak workspace would be.
Yeah, it started out sounding a little bit like that, too. But I'm glad that we had these guys on because we had to kind of fish around a little bit for all the details.
Mostly because I'm slow on figuring things out. But you know, I mean, OpenDoc, they mentioned OpenDoc, but Microsoft wanted to do this. Apple wanted to do this. Everybody thinks it's a good idea. It's the natural kind of way that humans work is not here. You're in an application. You can only do word processing. Now you're in a spreadsheet. You do spreadsheet. And if you want the two to work together, you subscribe and publish. And, you know, I mean, that's how a computer thinks.
Right.
Or actually it isn't. I mean, a computer doesn't have to think that way, but that's just, it's not how humans work. And if you think about it, if you take out a piece of paper, you could draw a chart, you can write a document, you can do anything.
And this is effectively going much closer towards the model of I have a smart desktop where I put stuff in the left drawer, I put stuff in the right drawer, and when I'm going to build my widget, I'm going to pull things out, and they're just going to fit together, and I can modify them and make them smarter. And what's really fun, though, is if I'm fixing the widget that's in my hand, all of a sudden all the other widgets like it in the drawer have the same intelligence.
Right.
Cool. They all talk back and forth to each other, which is really very, very cool. And
it's a little quixotic to say, hey, you know, we're gonna make it happen. We're gonna design a desktop that'll do this. And yet, if it doesn't happen in open source, it's pretty clear now it's not going to happen commercially. So the only way this can happen. So in a way, David and Quentin are kind of leading the way, saying, "Look, it's possible to do it differently."
This conversation today and what these guys have done in the last couple of years and what they're planning on doing in the next couple of years could be the next desktop revolution. It could be it all comes out of this the same way that Smalltalk really sort of flipped the frame for bitmap displays and mice.
Right.
It could be that this is the beginning of the next revolution in interacting with computers. And here we are chatting with
them. How does Smalltalk store its documents? Is it kind of the same way?
It's image based. So basically there is never a need to serialize the objects because
it's all stored within the workspace.
What the entire image from the lowest byte to the highest byte is written down as a long sequence of bytes to the disk. So it is loaded and saved as one giant memory image, which simplifies a lot of things, but also means that you really can't, you know, without having the exact same interpretation of the tools, you can't really point somewhere that, you know, from bytes 472 to 475, well, that's a small integer that was the third element of this array.
Right.
You have to actually look at the whole image always, even when it's on disk. Now, there are tools to do that. The Smalltalk VM
but
tools.
It's a little awkward, though, to do it that way.
Yeah, you can basically go in and you know, dissect a dead image and see what's actually in it.
Is a document in Smalltalk also an object?
Well, everything is an
They're
object.
They're all peers.
It doesn't matter what you say at the beginning of that sentence, Leo. It's an object.
Yeah.
Everything in Smalltalk is an object. Yeah. Even the
so in a way, that's kind of like Etoile in that sense.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You know, that's why I asked him about why the, you know, how do we contrast this with the original image vision for Smalltalk 80.
Right.
And I like when they said, you know, this doesn't live inside a box. This is sort of all out there.
Yeah.
Very nice. So I'm hoping that someday, you know, what these guys are doing will be something maybe that I would replace my OS X with.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I think what you don't want is something that lies on top of another operating system, but you want to, say, do this like BOS or whatever from scratch and have the whole thing be that way. And that's what Jeff Raskin was doing.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, Jeff passed away prematurely, but he really was working. In fact, he had, I don't know if you ever, did you ever see the, they did think they did it in Flash, the demonstration of kind of his operating system. I can't remember the exact name of it.
Was that the mother of all demos demo? No.
It was much more recent. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because Raskin was hired by Apple as a technical writing, but had this vision of this appliance computer that eventually really inspired the Macintosh. He was pushed out of the Macintosh, unfortunately. But he was kind of the king of intuitive interfaces. I've interviewed him a couple of times, and his son Asa is still writing software, doing some really interesting stuff. I think Asa did Ubiquiti for Firefox.
Well, if you look at the stuff that Dan Ingles was doing with the Lively kernel, that's similar to that. Having everything sort of visible and movable and able to be edited and changed, but all done because it was all running in JavaScript on canvases.
But again, the key is that a document isn't kind of, it's not, they did a better job of describing it than I did, but it's the whole idea of an object of the file system is really object oriented.
Yeah.
Kind of like WinFS, I guess, was supposed to be. And that a document isn't an expression of an application. And that's what we have right now. You know, if you have a document, well, who do you belong to? I belong to Word. You know, right. It's a Word document. No. The document is my blob of data that you interact with without these kind of modal applications. It's, you know, we're so embedded in the way it is now. It's hard for us even to think of it this way. It's such a shame.
Well, yeah, we've had, 30 years of, I have a directory that has files in it that has, my text from beginning to end. And that's, you're right. It takes some radical thinking, like what these guys are doing with the 12A, to say, wait a second, no, we really want.
Yes.
We really want just to be interacting with our virtual thingies here somehow.
Yes.
And we want them to be smart, and we want them to know about each other. We want to have them version controlled automatically. We want to have them replicated if we need, shared objects across spaces. I mean, I love what they were talking about having like a central server and then local servers and so that. Let's hurry up and get this to happen. This would be really cool.
Yeah, well, it's a good testament that somebody like you sits there and goes, yeah, okay, when can I get it?
Yeah.
How do I run that on my OS X?
Yep.
I hope someday we will see it. It's etoileos.com, and it's not really an operating system. So don't get fooled by that name. Very interesting stuff.
Maybe it stands for Etoile Open Source.
Oh, of course. What was I thinking? Of course it does.
Yeah, speaking of open source.
Yes.
Shall we talk a little bit about what's coming up?
What's coming up?
My goodness. We have a bunch of stuff on the schedule. Next week, we have two shows being taped on the same day. We've got Jonathan Marshall and Scott Davila on the XBMC project, which should be a really fun thing. That's the Xbox Media Center. Is that what that stands for? Yeah, right. So it's basically the thing that was built in or adapted for Boxy. It's a media player with all sorts of different kinds of media that understands.
Yeah, XBMC.
Stuff. Yeah. XBMC. And I think, is that? No, sorry. Okay. And then on that same day, we're trying to get a couple shows ahead so that when I'm gone on this next cruise, we'll still be able to do a show.
Well, we should explain. It's the same day for you and me. It'll be they'll be released on a weekly basis. We're not going to suddenly double up on you on the podcast. But because you're going on a cruise, we're going to kind of tape ahead. And for those of you who do watch the live taping of these shows, which is of course every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern. I'm sorry, 5 p.m. Eastern time, and then there'll be another one at roughly 6 or 6:30 p.m. Eastern time next week.
Right, and the second show for next week is Tux Paint, just added to our schedule. We've got Bill Kendrick and David Bruce, who are the lead programmers on Tux Paint. They're going to be talking about a program that I don't have much familiarity with, except that I know it's a painting program. So there we go.
I know Tux Paint. I love Tux Paint.
There we go. Yeah. Then after that, we've got Aaron Newcomb and David Brittle talking about ZFS, the file system that Sun developed that allows for very, very large file systems with real robustness and distribution and version control and all sorts of wonderful things built into the operating system. And might be a part of Snow Leopard. We're still trying to figure out. Oh, it'll be Snow Leopard server. That's what I've heard now. So not Snow Leopard client, which doesn't make any sense, but Snow Leopard server is actually
going to be a client. Will have it as a option, a read-write option.
We'll see.
I would guess. I mean, if you're going to put it in the server, you've got to have the clients be able to read those disks.
Understand that Aaron is actually coming into the studio. So anybody watching again on the live show will watch
That'll
Aaron in the studio. And I'll be in Portland, which will be weird. So I'll be phoning it in. And Aaron will be in the studio. Slightly switched around there. We've also have coming up, but just to quickly rattle off the rest, we've got Boink, which is the software that allows something like folding at home to happen, being able to distribute work units to various machines around the world and have everything sort of brought back together in a consistent way that can be double-checked to make sure people aren't cheating and things like that. We've got Arduino, the hardware project that's programmable. Should be a lot of fun with that. We've got EBOX, a machine allocation system, all written in 500,000 lines of Perl. That should be kind of fun. And Wubby, the Windows user... What's WUBI stand for?
I don't know. It's great, though. WUBI is great. W-U-B-I.
It lets you put Linux running on your Windows installation without having to completely create a separate partition and lay it out. You can just simply install it and it runs.
I think, something like that, right? Windows. I'm just looking for the. It says Wubi and Ubuntu installer. Windows Ubuntu installer. I don't know. It must stand for Windows Ubuntu installer. That must be what it stands for. Anyway, it's the coolest thing you ever saw in your life.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's those are the shows we got coming up, and we'll be adding some more to that. We've got a bunch of people on the short list coming up for that, but I'm just going to save those as future treats.
Kaden, how's your arm feeling? Feeling better?
Well, I went in for the CAT scan last Thursday, and we killed
the cat. How is that cat? Yeah.
I think the cat died. I won't know because my appointment with the doctor isn't for another week, so I'm not actually going to find out the results of the CAT scan. So I'm actually like, my God, what? How did it turn out? You know, can't you just tell me? Can't you point at something? So I don't know. No, it's not. I don't know yet. So yeah, my arm is not getting any better. It seems to be sort of stabilized at only about 50 to 60% functionality at most, depending on how you measure it. So
all this from a trip and fall. It's just amazing. It's so depressing. Ugh.
Oh, and of course, it's really sensitive to the cold, which doesn't help either, which really sucks. But speaking of the cold, segue again, I'm getting out of the cold in a couple of weeks. I will be at SCALE, the Southern California Linux Expo, and I'll be meeting with some of the people actually that are on our future list of people to interview. So I'm actually going to pull a couple of interviews while I'm there and talk to some really high-level people there about open source and stuff. I'm not actually on the program, so don't look for me on the program, but I will be wandering around with a Zoom H2 in my hand and recording stuff for Floss Weekly and just basically being a fun guy to hang out with.
Very good.
Uh-huh.
And Cruz is coming up to where?
A couple weeks from now, I'll be out of Fort Lauderdale heading on a 10-day that goes to Aruba and Curacao and the Panama Canal, just in one end and back out because it's way too time-consuming to go all the way through. But even for that going in one end and back out, they pay $100,000.
What?
It is insane. Yes. It's added to the price. It's actually why that cruise is very expensive because that's what they're charging just to go into one end of it.
Ugh. Wow.
I know. So that's why if it went all the way through, imagine that's even more expensive. So it's just crazy. That's the third Scientific American cruise. I'll be getting a lot more tape from that for future shows of my other podcast, podcast.insightcruises.com, which is currently running a bunch of shows from previous Scientific American cruises. This one coming up is actually pretty particularly focused on evolution, so it'll be things about very timely, given that this week or next week is Darwin's 250th birthday or
200th.
Something?
200th. In fact, okay. We're going to launch our new science show with Dr. Kiki this week. And you know who our guest is going to be to talk about Darwin?
Darwin? No.
My dad. My Your father dad. Is a paleontologist. He taught the Darwin course, the introduction to Darwin course at the University of California for many years. Mm. He's a well-known Darwin authority. Mm-hmm. And we'll be joining us with Dr. Kiki. We're going to record that this week as soon as I can figure out when my dad's available. And then we'll release that as our newest show. It's Dr. Kiki's Science Podcast.
Oh, very
and
cool.
I'll be
looking for that
next week. Yeah, so we're going to talk about what Darwin's theory really was and how he came about figuring it out and what it means.
Survival of the fittest.
Yes, natural selection.
That's right.
It's very interesting, actually. Good. All right, Randall. We've had a lot to think about, a lot to chew on today.
Mm-hmm. Very good show, Leo.
And I thank you so much. We'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.